This is live special coverage from NPR News of Democrat Joe Biden's first public appearance with Senator Kamala Harris as his running mate. I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Mary Louise Kelly, and we are expecting the pair to appear momentarily at this debut event for their ticket in Wilmington, Delaware. We're going to be carrying their remarks live, and we will also be carrying all kinds of reporting and fact-checking and analysis from our NPR colleagues along the way, including from our correspondent Scott Detrow, who is there on the ground in Wilmington and who we're going to check in with quickly while we wait for things to get underway. Scott Detrow, are you with us?
I am. Good afternoon. This has all the hallmarks of a big campaign event, except, of course, not a single supporter or crowd in this room. There's more reporters than usual for these Joe Biden events that have been happening in a socially distanced way, but we are all sitting inside white circles to make sure that we're all 6 feet apart from each other. Other than that slightly dystopian feel, this looks like a big campaign rollout event. There's five American flags, every state flag, and two high chairs for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to sit.
Where exactly are you, Scott? You're inside a high school there in Wilmington?
Yes, we're in a high school, Alexis DuPont High School in Wilmington. There had been some thoughts that this would be at a big fancy hotel in Wilmington where some sort of campaign event was being set up, but that might be the site for Joe Biden's acceptance speech next week, which he's, of course, doing remotely.
Okay. And you're describing chairs set up, all socially distanced, no supporters. It's eerily quiet behind you for you know, as compared to what it would usually sound like. It must be very strange.
It is strange. We do have some smooth jazz going through the speakers. I'm not sure if you can hear that. But, you know, normally at this point, I'd be kind of shouting over the crowd. Yeah. Normally at this point, I'd be shouting over the crowd. But this is maybe the fifth time I've been to one of these socially distanced events. And it's a strange feeling in the room because Joe Biden gives a speech like he's speaking to a large audience. And he's certainly speaking to a large television audience. But there's hardly anybody in the room.
Yeah. So what are you expecting to hear? Do we know what the format is? Do we know what they have to get across for this to be a successful launch?
Not sure what the exact format is. I assume they'll both be giving speeches, but I think we can be pretty sure as to what the themes are. We've been hearing a lot in recent days or in the day since Kamala Harris became his running mate of the fact that Joe Biden sees Kamala Harris as somebody who he has shared values with, a shared vision with. Somebody who he feels like he can trust as a governing partner. They've both spoken a lot about the fact that Kamala Harris knew Joe Biden's son, Beau, who passed away, but he was Delaware Attorney General at the time that Kamala Harris was California Attorney General, and they worked together specifically on a big case that involved going after big banks for fraud and abuse. So those are all themes I'd expect we'd hear about.
Yeah. And just to touch on Kamala Harris, who really the spotlight will be on because this is her big debut. I know you've covered her as you know, when you were covering Congress, and she's a senator, of course. You interviewed her last summer. Just give me a sense of what you were watching for her tonight.
Sure. Kamala Harris is somebody who ran for president, of course. She got into the race in January of 2019. After just a couple years in the U.S. Senate, she's really one of those senators who had a big national profile almost from the moment she arrived in the U.S. Senate. That had a lot to do with the fact that she, tapping into her long career as a prosecutor, first San Francisco District Attorney, then California Attorney General, really starred in a sense, you could say, in high-profile Senate hearings, first in the Intelligence Committee's investigation into both possible Russian interference in the election and possible obstruction of justice by the Trump White House, and then later in the confirmation hearings for Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. So she had this high-profile rising star reputation. She got into the presidential race. She had a lot of buzz early on, but she ended up kind of having a hard time articulating a clear-cut reason for her candidacy in such a crowded field. So many voters in Iowa and New Hampshire and other states would tell me, I really like Kamala Harris, but I'm not sure why I should vote for her and not anybody else. Hmm. She ended up ending that presidential campaign before the Iowa caucuses, but since then has really been a strong voice in the Senate on coronavirus, on policing and systemic racism reform, and really in trying to highlight the fact that African Americans especially are really hard hit by the coronavirus.
All right, Scott, I am going to release you momentarily to go enjoy some of that smooth jazz. Please come back and holler if you see them coming up to stage. But that for now, that is Scott Detrow. He is there, as you can hear, on the ground in Wilmington, Delaware. We have a lot of other correspondents who we want to check in with as we await the first public appearance of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Ari, all
including
yours.
NPR's Mara Liasson, our national political correspondent. And good to have you with us, Mara.
Happy to be here.
It's interesting that Kamala Harris is a history-making choice as a running mate and also considered sort of the consensus pick, like a safe choice. What do those two things say about Biden's approach to this campaign and this election?
Well, that's what's pretty interesting. I mean, Kamala Harris was at the top of the list all along, and she was considered the consensus candidate because there weren't any anti-Harris groups out there in the Democratic Party. Nobody was out there arguing that if she was put on the ticket, she would lose a big clump of voters. Quite the contrary. But she is a history-making choice. First African-American, first person of Asian descent. Her parents are Jamaican and Indian immigrants. So she's a history-making candidate. And she's a center-left candidate, kind of like Joe Biden. The Trump campaign, of course, is working very hard to make her out to be a far-left candidate, but she's not. And she has experience. She was the Attorney General of California. She has been a senator. And the most important thing for Biden, who's called himself a transition candidate, is that he thinks she is ready to be president.
So what do you see her role as being in the next 3 months of this campaign? What does she need to do to give the ticket the boost that the Biden campaign is seeking?
Well, the job of the vice presidential candidate is to prosecute the case, and she was a prosecutor, and that's the kind of thing she does very well. We've seen her in hearings. Of course, the president has complained mightily about her treatment of Brett Kavanaugh, but she was a prosecutor, and she's going to prosecute the case against Donald Trump. Oftentimes, the number two on the ticket can be the attack dog in a way that the top of the ticket might not want to be. I think she'll do that. She's a very capable debater. I think there's going to be a lot of anticipation around her only one debate with Vice President Pence. That happens on October 7th in Salt Lake City. So that's what she's going to do. She's also going to try to energize and excite the African-American base. Female African-Americans, and she is one of them, are the bedrock of the Democratic Party, kind of like evangelicals are for the Republican Party, and Vice President Pence represented them. She's going to be trying to energize the base, who already is pretty energized, but Biden and Harris have to make sure that they turn out in large numbers.
Do the Democrats you're talking to see any risk that her history as a prosecutor might alienate the people who were supporters of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, the people who want to defund the police, that branch of the Democratic Party?
Net, 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 the answer is no. You have heard some grumbling from Bernie Sanders supporters about the fact that she was a prosecutor. Joe Biden isn't for defunding the police. He's going to set the policies, and she isn't either. I think that in a general election, having the left wing of the Democratic Party complain about you oftentimes is a good thing. Mm. In a primary, it can be a little trickier, but I haven't talked to any Democrats who consider that to be a real problem.
That is NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson. Thank you, Mara.
Thank you.
And we are waiting for Kamala Harris and Joe Biden to take the stage at this event in Wilmington, Delaware, which is in a oddly empty high school for the sake of social distancing and
socially
public health.
Distanced,
while there is a large crowd outside holding Biden signs, they seem to be masked and distant, but there are a lot of people there waiting to see the candidates arrive.
All right, let me pick it up because I want to bring in one more, if we can squeeze in one more NPR reporter before things kick off there in Wilmington. I want to bring in our Juana Summers, who covers demographics and culture for the campaign. Hey there, Juana.
Hey there.
We talked about this some yesterday, but it's just such a historic nature of the campaign and the platform and the ticket that we are that we're going to watch launch formally tonight. As you and I talked about yesterday, there was such pressure for Joe Biden after he committed to picking a woman, to picking a woman of color. There was pressure on him to pick a black woman. A lot of commentary last night over the fact that Kamala Harris represents not only the first black woman on a major party ticket, but also the first Asian American. Just talk about how she identifies and what that means for these communities.
Yeah, you know, that's absolutely right. She is making history on two fronts this week because of her background. As Mara Liasson mentioned, she is the daughter of immigrants from Jamaica and from India, something she talks about movingly on her book. I covered a lot of her campaign as well, and it's something she talked about on the trail. She tweeted out a video earlier today where they gave us a little peek into how Joe Biden asked her to be VP, but she also talked about her background, and she talked about her mother and how her mother, who is Indian, raised her and her sister Maya, and she knew that she was raising two Black girls who the world would see and treat differently because of what they looked like. And that to me is really evocative of how I have heard Kamala Harris throughout her career talk about her background. She's someone who also chose, after growing up in Oakland and Berkeley, to attend Howard University, which is one of the country's most well-known historically Black colleges. She talks about being pushed in a stroller to go to civil rights protests as a child. And throughout her own presidential campaign, which ended before voting began, she constantly did callbacks to Black culture, talked about the importance of her mother, who, of course, died of cancer and was not able to see her daughter seek the presidency or become a member of this ticket. But that's so clearly part of what makes her who she is, and what I think is part of what made her magnetic to so many people who did support that presidential bid that she made.
Now, you, of the many reporters who will be covering this campaign, you have an excellent advantage and vantage point in that you covered her primary campaign when she was running for president in 2019. What did you pick up on there that may inform how we should think about how she will carry herself, what we should be watching for as she now embarks in this new campaign as the vice presidential running mate to Joe Biden?
Yeah, so having sat down with her a couple of times and spent a lot of time on her trips, I've noticed that she spends a lot of time just talking to average people, specifically kids. She seems to really like talking to children and trying to leave them with some kind of touching words. But she's just a magnetic campaigner. I think back to that first rally that she had in Oakland, California, that drew more than 20,000 people, larger than any other announcement rally, with all of the bunting and the trappings of a huge rally, and just walking away and hearing people say that they found her magnetic, they found her impressive. Even if they hadn't heard from her, they just wanted to come and check it out. I think she's someone who sparks a lot of curiosity, and particularly in this moment where this country is grappling so openly with systemic racism and injustice, Kamala Harris is someone who seems to be comfortable talking about that, even if she doesn't always make everyone happy. She's comfortable speaking about that and speaking forcefully. You saw her standing with protesters recently in support of Black Lives Matter and going down to Black Lives Matter Plaza. And I think in this moment, she could be a really powerful voice for those sentiments.
Juana Summers, I have one more question for you before we check back in with Scott Detrow, who is, of course, there in Wilmington awaiting at the start of this event. And the question is this, in terms of the substance, in terms of what she will bring to this campaign, what issues she may choose to elevate or be really personally active on. What are they?
You know, I think that she has taken a leading role in recent months on the issues I was just talking about in terms of reforms around police brutality and the anti-lynching legislation that she championed with other senators, I think will be huge issues that she's likely to talk about. She is someone who spent a lot of time, though she was a little bit muddled on this perhaps during her own campaign, talking about healthcare, something dear to her heart as the daughter of a cancer researcher, a breast cancer researcher. So I think those are a couple of issues that I heard her highlight throughout her campaign that could really inform the partnership that she is going to have with former Vice President Biden.
All right, that is NPR political reporter Juana Summers. And Ari, let me hand it back to you.
And let's go back to Scott Detrow, who is there in the room in Wilmington, Delaware, where this event is going to begin any moment. Scott, any update? I hear some smooth jazz is still playing behind you.
The jazz is still smooth, but there were a few signs that maybe this event was close to starting, some of the telltale signs of, you know, Secret Service getting into place.
All right.
But we have had some storms in the area, and I'll say that there's a partial power outage again, so that might delay things a little bit.
All right. Well, let me ask you about another way in which the Kamala Harris nomination is historic. If perhaps not as nationally a significant way, it's significant to people in California, which is that this is the first time a California Democrat has been on the national ticket like this before. This, people like Ronald Reagan, they were all California Republicans. You were a political reporter in Sacramento when she was attorney general for the state. What can you tell us about her record in the state there and what that brings to the national conversation here?
Yeah, she, I think similarly to the way that she entered the U.S. Senate in 2017, she always had the mark of somebody who was somebody on the rise, somebody who could run for president or vice president one day. That's despite the fact that when she was first elected statewide as state attorney general, she won by the slimmest of margins. In fact, the San Francisco Chronicle called the race for her Republican opponent until late votes put her over the top. Some mail-in votes were able to get her over the top to win that race. And I think that was something that that had an effect on her going forward as she chose what issues to stake out a position on and what issues to not quite have a position on.
Not to mention the importance of mail-in voting.
Sure, yeah, that's certainly going to be a very important topic a decade later in 2020 as more and more people cast their votes, through the mail. But certainly you saw that when it came to issues of police reform, police oversight, whether or not the state should take over investigations of officer-involved shootings. That was something she was pretty leery to dive into as attorney general. She got a lot of criticism for that over the last few years. And, of course, she's since become very forceful on that issue as a U.S. senator, taking a lead on the legislation. I should note another 2020 detail happening right now. We have somebody wiping down the lectern in the microphone with disinfectant.
Yes. While wearing a mask, of course. But in those early days in elected office in California, she had some controversial cases, particularly involving the death penalty and the shooting of a police officer.
That's right, and that's the reason why she had to work to win back police union support as state attorney general. This was a very early moment in her tenure as San Francisco district attorney. She was, of course, the first woman of color to not only be district attorney in San Francisco, but anywhere statewide in California. Just a few months into her tenure, a police officer was killed. She had campaigned against the death penalty, and she said, "No, I am not going to seek the death penalty in this case." She got a lot of angry pushback for that, including from California Senator Dianne Feinstein, who urged Harris to seek the death penalty at the police officer's funeral. That was a major issue when she ran statewide for the first time, and something that really was one of the first things that a lot of California voters knew about Kamala Harris.
Scott, I have a Biden question for you. So we're talking Kamala Harris, because she's, of course, the exciting new name who's going to be up on the stage tonight. But worth noting, we have not seen a lot of Joe Biden on the campaign trail. He's been laying low. He's been in the basement. It's going to be interesting to see him actually in action and doing a big event like this. How is he feeling about his campaign? How is the campaign feeling situated now that they have a vice presidential nominee on the ticket and heading into the convention next week?
Well, the campaign is feeling pretty confident. We mentioned that Harris is the first Californian on a national ticket since Ronald Reagan. He's relevant here because Joe Biden has sustained the largest continued national leads in a race. He's been about 10 points ahead of President Trump for more than a month now in poll after national poll. If that were to hold in the fall, and of course that's an enormous if, as 2016 taught us, that would be the biggest win by any presidential candidate since the Reagan era. We just don't see races that are that margins that are that wide, and that's why the Biden campaign does expect things to get closer. But they feel very confident right now. They feel confident in those three states we spent years talking about, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. They feel confident in that second tier of swing states that have gotten a lot more attention recently, and that's North Carolina, Arizona, and Florida. And Joe Biden has been consistently doing one or two events a week, like this event here, speaking in a socially distanced setting to a handful of reporters for a couple months now. June 1st was his first event. I was there. He came and held a listening session in a Wilmington African-American church shortly after the George Floyd killings, just listening to black supporters. A lot of them, even though they've been longtime supporters of Biden, were very critical that day of the Democratic Party, of the status quo. That's something that was immediately overshadowed because just an hour or so after that event ended, President Trump held his infamous photo op in front of the church and when Lafayette Square was cleared with tear gas.
Well, as Scott talks about the Trump-Biden dynamic, this is a good moment to bring Mara Liasson back in and ask how the Trump campaign is responding to the Kamala Harris nomination and whether they think this is a good thing for their campaign or if it worries them.
Well, it certainly isn't as good as if Joe Biden had picked some of the other candidates, which would have been easier to demonize. That's why he picked Kamala Harris. So I think that the Trump campaign has flailed around a little. They've tried a whole bunch of different attacks. She put too many African-Americans in jail. She didn't put enough African-Americans in jail. She's a phony. She's a radical lefty. She's mean. She's nasty. Those are very...
very Trumpian
gendered,
terms.
Attacks.
Yeah.
But I think they're having a little trouble figuring out what to do. I think they're settling on the she's the left-wing candidate who's going to control Joe Biden. She's the real president. And what's so interesting to me, I've covered a lot of these, I can't think of a vice presidential candidate who has been more charismatic and had more interest in her than the top of the ticket. Juana kept on using the word magnetic. She is charismatic. She has this warm, tough persona.
Perhaps Sarah Palin, you could
argue. That certainly wasn't the case with... Maybe in a different way. Yes, she was a curiosity, and people didn't know her, but she had a kind of electrifying personality, and it came through on the TV screen. But that certainly wasn't the case when Biden was the vice presidential candidate or Pence. And that's going to be interesting because one of the Trump campaign's attacks is that she's the real president. And maybe Joe Biden won't make it to Election Day or Inauguration Day, or she might be the president sooner than you think. So I think there's going to be more attention on her than on a normal vice presidential candidate. Nobody paid attention to Tim Kaine after he was put on the ticket.
All right, everybody, if you are just joining us, let me get you up to speed. I'm Mary Louise Kelly with Ari Shapiro, and we are awaiting the kickoff any moment now in Wilmington, Delaware, of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris appearing together for the first time since he named her as his running mate yesterday. So, Maura Liasson, who is just giving us a little bit of commentary here as we await and gear up for this event. Maura, one more question to you, which is about Democratic Party unity or lack thereof, a question that's been on my mind since Harris secured the VP spot, has been where does this leave Bernie Sanders people? Where does this leave the Elizabeth Warren people, the progressive wing of the party? Are they on board with this? Do they still have a home here in the Democratic Party?
I think with very few exceptions, they are on board. I have never seen as much Democratic Party unity as I have this year. You know, what's the old joke? I'm not a member of an organized party. I'm a Democrat. Yes, there have been some complaints from Bernie people, but for the most part, they're on board. Elizabeth Warren has become the thought leader of the party. She has contributed a tremendous amount of the Biden agenda. I think that other candidates on the left, more to the left than Kamala Harris, have praised her pick. The fact that she is an African-American woman and an Asian, the daughter of Indian immigrants, that goes a long way. I don't see this party split over this choice of a vice presidential candidate. I don't. And what you saw from the Sanders camp, especially in the writing of the platform, coming up with Biden's agenda, they are on board in a way that they were not in 2016.
I just want to note that we seem to be close to the beginning of this event with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris appearing together for the first time as a ticket. We just got a 2-minute warning. We were seeing some aides put remarks on the lectern, glass of water, all of the trappings, and there was a tweet showing the two of them backstage, each wearing a blue suit, each wearing a black mask, ready to go. So, Maura, what will you be listening for from Kamala Harris for this first outing as the running mate to Joe Biden?
Well, I'm going to be listening for how she presents herself as part of a team. You know, just asked a whole lot of questions about her positions on policies. None of that matters anymore. Mm-hmm. She is the vice presidential candidate. Joe Biden sets the agenda. And, you know, it's interesting. Tim Kaine gave the two of them some advice today. He said, do a lot of events together. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm watching for, to see if she kind of multiplies Biden just by standing next to him, if they're more than the sum of their parts, if they look like they're a real team, if they complement each other.
Of course, the challenges of doing that during a pandemic are enormous
anymore.
Because all of the typical trappings of a campaign are gone.
Right, but they can still do events together. They can be side by side in masks. They're doing one now.
All right, the pair of them are being announced. So let's bring in the sound from that event there in Wilmington, Delaware, as we see Joe Biden and Kamala Harris appear together for the first time. They are walking out side by side, both wearing their black masks. Joe Biden has a crisp white pocket square, a light blue tie with his blue suit. Kamala Harris wearing a blue suit herself with a white blouse underneath. Here we go.
Keeping our social distancing and playing by the rules. Good afternoon, everyone. To me and to Kamala, this is an exciting day. It's a great day for our campaign. It's a great day for America, in my view. Over the past several weeks, I've had the incredible privilege of meeting and spending a good deal of time with a group of talented women leaders, all of whom are qualified to be president. With each one, the more I learned about them, the more I talked to them, the more impressed I was, even though I knew them before. I want to thank each and every one of them for being part of this process, and I look forward to working with them as we rebuild this country, to get elected, and once we are elected, God willing. I approach this with a seriousness of purpose and of mind, because this is a serious moment for our nation. We're at one of those inflection points. You've heard me say that before in our history. A life-changing election for this nation. And the choice we make this November is going to decide the future of America for a very, very long time. And I had a great choice, great opportunities. I had a great choice, but I have no doubt that I picked the right person to join me as the next Vice President of the United States of America, and that's Senator Kamala Harris. You know, and it seems Americans all across this nation, at least at the outset here, agree with me. Yesterday, we had our best grassroots fundraising day of the campaign, more than double our previous record. And in doing so, we set a single-day record for online political fundraising. And I think I know why. So I hope that you'll join us as well, those of you who listen today. Go to joebiden.com today, $5, $10, whatever. Kamala, as you all know, is smart, she's tough, she's experienced, she's a proven fighter for the backbone of this country, the middle class, for all those who are struggling to get into the middle class. Kamala knows how to govern. She knows how to make the hard calls. She's ready to do this job on day one. And we're both ready to get to work rebuilding this nation and building it better. As Attorney General of the largest state in the country, Kamala took on the big banks over mortgage fraud and won, took on big oil when it wanted to pollute without consequences. She was a pioneer in marriage equality and tackled the gun lobby. You know, we've all watched her in the United States Senate go toe-to-toe with Trump officials, trying to hide the truth, asking the tough questions needed to be asked, and not stopping until she got an answer. And when none was forthcoming, it was obvious what the answer was. As a member of the Intelligence Committee and the Judiciary Committee, she's been the center in the middle of the most critical national security challenges our country faces. Well aware of all the threats to this nation and ready to respond to them. And as a child of immigrants, she knows personally how immigrant families enrich our country, as well as the challenges of what it means to grow up Black and Indian American in the United States of America. Her story is America's story, different from mine in many particulars, but also not so different in the essentials. She's worked hard. She's never backed down from a challenge. And she has earned each and every of the accolades and achievements that she has gained, many of them often in the face of obstacles that others put in her way, but never quit. And this morning, all across the nation, little girls woke up, especially little Black and brown girls, who so often feel overlooked and undervalued in their communities. But today, just maybe, they're seeing themselves for the first time in a new way as the stuff of president and vice presidents. In her campaign in the primary, Kamala often talked about what she referred to as the 3 a.m. agenda, about moms and dads awake late at night in their kitchens, worried, scared, uncertain about how they were going to take care of their families, about how they were going to pay the bills, about how they were going to make it, simply make it. Growing up in Scranton and Claymont, Delaware, I saw that struggle with my family as well. Kamala saw it with hers as well. And millions of Americans are living that struggle as we speak, especially in this moment of crisis, especially with so many jobs lost. Kamala and I both know that all folks are looking for, as my dad would say, is an even shot. Just give me a shot, a fair shot. A shot at making.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News.
And it'll be the work of our administration to make sure they get a fair shot. Working families need someone on their side in this nation, because they certainly don't have anyone in the president now on their side. That's going to change in the Biden-Harris administration. It's going to be gratifying to see the strong, enthusiastic reaction to Senator Harris as our next vice president. You know, it comes from people all over the country. It's already occurring all over the country, all ideological views, all backgrounds. Events, of course, we are predictable, some of them. It comes from all over, except, of course, from Donald Trump's White House and his allies. You all knew it was coming. You could have set your watches to it. Donald Trump has already started his attacks, calling Kamala, quote, nasty, whining about how she is, quote, mean to his appointees. It's no surprise, because whining is what Donald Trump does best, better than any president in American history. Is anyone surprised Donald Trump has a problem with a strong woman or strong women across the board? We know that more is to come. So let's be clear. If you're a working person, worried about whether or not you'll have a job to go to, whether or not you'll be able to pay your mortgage, pay your rent, worried about the poison in the air you breathe, the water you drink, worried about your civil rights, even your basic right to dignity, which is under attack with this administration, Kamala Harris has had your back, and now we have to have her back. She's going to stand with me in this campaign, and all of us are going to stand up for her. On January 20th, 2021, we're all going to watch Senator Harris raise her right hand and swear the oath of office as the first woman ever to serve in the second highest office in America, in this land. And then we're going to get to work fixing the mess that President Trump and Vice President Pence have created, both at home and abroad, through 4 years of mismanagement and coddling of terrorists and thugs around the world. Not only will America dig itself out of this hole they put us in, we're going to build back, and we're going to build back better. We have a public health crisis. While he's in court trying to do away with health care, with more than 5 million reported infections, 165,000 people dead and climbing as a consequence of COVID-19. And still, months later, no real leadership or plan from the President of the United States how to get this pandemic under control. No real help for the states and local governments trying to fill the vacuum of leadership from the White House. No real help for children and educators, for small businesses and frontline workers that are holding our country together. Instead, he's issuing executive orders and making promises that in the end will defund the Social Security system while insisting that this virus will disappear. The Joe Biden and Kamala Harris administration will have a comprehensive plan to meet the challenge of COVID-19 and turn the corner on this pandemic. Masking, clear science-based guidance, dramatically scaling up testing, getting states and local governments the resources they need to open the schools and businesses safely. We can do this. We just need a president and a vice president willing to lead and take responsibility. Not as this president says, it's not my fault. The governor should thank me more. As that old saying goes, give me a break. We have an economic crisis with more than 16 million Americans, 16 million still out of work. Donald Trump is on track to break another record, on track to leave office with the worst jobs record of any American president in modern history. But instead of doing the hard work of meeting face-to-face with congressional leaders, Democrats and Republicans in the White House, like every other president has done in a crisis, to get Americans the relief they need and deserve, Donald Trump is on the golf course. If I told you this 3 years ago, you'd look at me like I was being crazy. He hasn't even met with the leadership. He doesn't have time, it appears. We have a climate crisis that Donald Trump refuses to even acknowledge. When he thinks about climate change, all we hear is the word hoax. The Biden-Harris administration is going to meet the climate crisis, protect the health of the American public. And along the way, we're going to deliver one word, jobs, good-paying jobs. We have a racial justice crisis. Donald Trump seeks only to inflame it with his politics of racist rhetoric and appeals to division. You know, today is not only the day I'm proud to introduce Senator Kamala Harris as the vice presidential nominee of the Democratic Party. It's also the third anniversary of that terrible day in Charlottesville. Remember what it felt like to see those neo-Nazis, close your eyes, and those Klansmen, white supremacists, coming out of fields, carrying lighted torches, faces contorted, bulging, veins, pouring into the streets of a historic American city, spewing the same anti-Semitic bile we heard in Hitler's Germany in the 30s. Remember how it felt to see a violent clash ensue between those celebrating hate and those standing against it? It was a wake-up call for all of us as a country. For me, it was a call to action. My father used to say, silence is complicity, not original to him, but he believed it. At that moment, I knew I couldn't stand by and let Donald Trump, a man who went on to say, when asked about what he thought, he said there were very fine people on both sides. Quote, very fine people on both sides. No president of the United States of America has ever said anything like that. See him continue to attack everything that makes America, America. I knew we were in the battle for the soul of the nation. That's when I decided to run. And I'm proud now to have Senator Harris at my side in that battle because she shares with the same intensity I do. For she's someone who knows what's at stake. The question is for all Americans to answer, who are we as a nation? What do we stand for? And most importantly, what do we want to be? You know, someone who knows that the future of this country is limited only by the barriers we place on our own imaginations, because there's nothing Americans cannot achieve when we put our minds to it and we do it together. One of the reasons I chose Kamala is because we both believe that we can define America simply in one word, possibilities. Possibilities. Let me say it again. Possibilities. That's America. That's what sets this nation apart is that everyone, the ability for everyone, and we mean everyone, to go as far and dream as big as hard work and their God-given ability will take them. When I agreed to serve as President Obama's running mate, he asked me a number of questions, as I've asked Kamala. But the most important was, he said to me, he asked me what I wanted, most importantly. I told him I wanted to be the last person in the room before he made important decisions. That's what I asked Kamala. I asked Kamala to be the last voice in the room, to always tell me the truth, which she will, challenge my assumptions if she disagrees, ask the hard questions, because that's the way we make the best decisions for the American people. I got a chance to spend some time at my home today with Kamala and Doug, and I want to thank them. I thank them, thank them publicly for agreeing to join and take this journey with Jill and me. Doug, you're going to have to learn what it means to be a barrier breaker yourself in this job you're about to take on. America's first, second gentleman. And although they're not with us here today, I want to thank Ellen Cole as well. I had a chance to speak to Doug's mom and dad and to Ellen Cole. And we're going to get our kids together to let them know what's coming. My grandchildren are about the age of their children. I got to speak to them. My campaign has always been a family affair, every campaign I've run. So I've got some news for you. You're all honorary Bidens. And here's the best part. Kamala, you've been an honorary Biden for quite some time. You know, I came first to know who Kamala was through our son, Beau Biden. They were friends. They served as attorneys general at the same time. They took on the same big fights together. Kamala in California, Beau here in Delaware. Big fights that helped change the entire country. I know how much Beau respected Kamala and her work, and that mattered a lot to me, to be honest with you, as I made this decision. So now, we need to get to work, pulling this nation out of these crises we find ourselves in, getting our economy back on track, uniting this nation, and yes, winning the battle for the soul of America. My fellow Americans, now let me introduce to you, for the first time, your next Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris. Kamala, floor is yours.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News, and Joe Biden is now handing the lectern over to his running mate, Kamala Harris. This is where you would ordinarily hear enthusiastic cheers from the crowd, but of course, there is no crowd because of social distancing rules. There are just a few reporters.
Joe.
Let's listen to Senator Harris speak.
Thank you, Joe. As I said, Joe, when you called me, I am incredibly honored by this responsibility, and I'm ready to get to work. I am ready to get to work. After the most competitive primary in history, the country received a resounding message that Joe was the person to lead us forward. And Joe, I'm so proud to stand with you. And I do so mindful of all the heroic and ambitious women before me, whose sacrifice, determination, and resilience makes my presence here today even possible. This is a moment of real consequence for America. Everything we care about, our economy, our health, our children, the kind of country we live in, it's all on the line. We're reeling from the worst public health crisis in a century. The president's mismanagement of the pandemic has plunged us into the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. And we're experiencing a moral reckoning with racism and systemic injustice that has brought a new coalition of conscience to the streets of our country, demanding change. America is crying out for leadership. Yet we have a president who cares more about himself than the people who elected him. A president who is making every challenge we face even more difficult to solve. But here's the good news. We don't have to accept the failed government of Donald Trump and Mike Pence. In just 83 days, we have a chance to choose a better future for our country. So, Joe, Dr. Biden, thank you for the trust you've placed in me. Jill, I know you will be an incredible First Lady. And my husband, Doug, and I are so grateful, grateful to become a part of your extended family. And ever since I received Joe's call, I've been thinking, yes, about the first Biden that I really came to know, and that, of course, is Joe's beloved son, one of his beloved sons, Beau. In the midst of the Great Recession, Beau and I spoke on the phone practically every day, sometimes multiple times a day, working together to win back billions of dollars for homeowners from the big banks of the nation that were foreclosing on people's homes. And let me just tell you about Beau Biden. I learned quickly that Beau was the kind of guy who inspired people to be a better version of themselves. He really was the best of us. And when I would ask him, where'd you get that? Where did this come from? He'd always talk about his dad. And I will tell you, the love that they shared was incredible to watch. It was the most beautiful display of the love between a father and a son. And Beau talked about how Joe would spend 4 hours every day riding the rails back and forth from Wilmington to Washington so he could make breakfast for his kids in the morning and make it home in time to tuck them in bed each night. All of this so two little boys who had just lost their mom and their sister in a tragic accident would know that the world was still turning. And that's how I came to know Joe. He's someone whose first response when things get tough is never to think about himself, but to care for everyone else. He's someone who never asks, why is this happening to me? And instead asks, what can I do to make life better for you? His empathy, his compassion, his sense of duty to care for others is why I am so proud to be on this ticket. And Joe and I, yes, we are cut from the same cloth. Family is everything to me too. And I cannot wait for America to get to know my husband Doug and our amazing kids Cole and Ella. Because whether I'm cheering in the bleachers at a swim meet or setting up a college room dorm, or helping my goddaughter prepare for her school debate, or building Legos with my godson, or hugging my two baby nieces, or cooking dinner, Sunday dinner, my family means everything to me. And I've had a lot of titles over my career, and certainly Vice President will be great, but Mamala will always be the one that means the most. And you know, my mother and father, they came from opposite sides of the world to arrive in America, one from India and the other from Jamaica, in search of a world-class education. But what brought them together was the civil rights movement of the 1960s. And that's how they met, as students in the streets of Oakland, marching and shouting for this thing called justice, in a struggle that continues today. And I was part of it. My parents would bring me to protests, strapped tightly in my stroller. And my mother, Shamala, raised my sister Maya and me to believe that it was up to us and every generation of Americans to keep on marching. She'd tell us, don't sit around and complain about things, do something. So I did something. I devoted my life to making real the words carved in the United States Supreme Court, equal justice under law. And 30 years ago, I stood before a judge for the first time, breathed deep, and uttered the phrase that would truly guide my career and the rest of my career. Kamala Harris for the people. The people, that's who I represented as district attorney, fighting on behalf of victims who needed help. The people, that's who I fought for as California's attorney general when I took on transnational criminal organizations who traffic in guns and drugs and human beings. And it's the people who I have fought for as a United States senator, where I've worked every day to hold Trump officials accountable to the American people. And the people are who Joe and I will fight for every day in the White House. And let me tell you, as somebody who has presented my fair share of arguments in court, the case against Donald Trump and Mike Pence is open and shut. Just look where they've gotten us. More than 16 million out of work. Millions of kids who cannot go back to school. A crisis of poverty, of homelessness, afflicting Black, Brown, and Indigenous people the most. A crisis of hunger, afflicting 1 in 5 mothers who have children that are hungry. And tragically, more than 165,000 lives that have been cut short. Many with loved ones who never got the chance to say goodbye. It didn't have to be this way. 6 years ago, in fact, we had a different health crisis. It was called Ebola. And we all remember that pandemic. But you know what happened then? Barack Obama and Joe Biden did their job. Only 2 people in the United States died. 2. That is what's called leadership. But compare that to the moment we find ourselves in now. When other countries are following the science, Trump pushed miracle cures he saw on Fox News. While other countries were flattening the curve, he said the virus would just poof, go away. Quote, like a miracle. So when other countries opened back up for business, what did we do? We had to shut down again. This virus has impacted almost every country. But there's a reason it has hit America worse than any other advanced nation. It's because of Trump's failure to take it seriously from the start. His refusal to get testing up and running, his flip-flopping on social distancing and wearing masks, his delusional belief that he knows better than the experts. All of that is reason, and the reason that an American dies of COVID-19 every 80 seconds. It's why countless businesses have had to shut their doors for good. It's why there is complete chaos over when and how to reopen our schools. Mothers and fathers are confused and uncertain and angry about childcare and the safety of their kids at school, whether they'll be in danger if they go or fall behind if they don't. Trump is also the reason millions of Americans are now unemployed. He inherited the longest economic expansion in history from Barack Obama and Joe Biden. And then, like everything else he inherited, he ran it straight into the ground. Because of Trump's failures of leadership, our economy has taken one of the biggest hits out of all the major industrialized nations with an unemployment rate that has tripled as of today. This is what happens when we elect a guy who just isn't up for the job. Our country ends up in tatters, and so does our reputation around the world. But let's be clear, this election isn't just about defeating Donald Trump or Mike Pence. It's about building this country back better. And that's exactly what Joe and I will do. We'll create millions of jobs and fight climate change through a clean energy revolution. Bring back critical supply chains so the future is made in America. Build on the Affordable Care Act so everyone has the peace of mind that comes with health insurance. And finally, offer caregivers the dignity, the respect, and the pay they deserve. We'll protect a woman's right to make her own decisions about her own body, root out systemic racism in our justice system, and pass a new Voting Rights Act, a John Lewis Voting Rights Act, that will ensure every voice is heard and every voice is counted. The civil rights struggle is nothing new to Joe. It's why he got into public service. It's why he helped reauthorize the Voting Rights Act and restore unemployment discrimination and employment discrimination laws. And today, he takes his place in the ongoing story of America's march toward equality and justice as the only who has served alongside the first Black president and has chosen the first Black woman as his running mate. But as Joe always points out, this election is about more than politics. It's about who we are as a country. And I'll admit, over the past 4 years, there have been moments when I have truly worried about our future. But whenever I think that there is a reason for doubt, whenever I've had my own doubts, I think of you, the American people, the doctors and nurses and frontline workers who are risking your lives to save others. The truck drivers and the workers in grocery stores, in factories, in farms, working there, putting your own safety on the line to help us get through this pandemic. The women and students taking to the streets in unprecedented numbers. The dreamers and immigrants who know that families belong together. The LGBTQ Americans who know that love is love. People of every age and color and creed who are finally declaring in one voice that yes, Black lives matter. All across this country, a whole new generation of children is growing up hearing the cries for justice and the chance of hope on which I was raised. Some strapped into strollers of their own. And trust me, it's a song you'll never forget. So to everyone keeping up the fight, you are doing something. You are doing something great. You are the heroes of our time. And you are the reason I know we are going to bring our country closer to realizing its great promise. But to do it, we'll need to work, organize, and vote like never before, because we need more than a victory on November 3rd. We need a mandate that proves that the past few years do not represent who we are or who we aspire to be. Joe likes to say that character is on the ballot, and it's true. When he saw what happened in Charlottesville 3 years ago today, he knew we were in a battle for the soul of our nation. And together with your help, that's a battle we will win. Earlier this year, I said I'd do whatever Joe asked me to do. And so now I'm asking you to do the same. So visit joebiden.com to get involved in this campaign and vote, because electing Joe Biden is just the start of the work ahead of us. And I couldn't be prouder to be by his side, running to represent you, the people. Thank you, and may God bless the United States of America. Thank you.
That is Kamala Harris, the Democratic presumptive vice presidential nominee, appearing on stage with Joe Biden, of course, the Democratic presidential nominee, or presumptive nominee. Their first joint appearance since he named her yesterday as his running mate. They were on stage together in Wilmington, Delaware, in a big high school hall. Normally would be packed with all kinds of people and banners and confetti and press, and they're doing their best to make some noise, as you can hear behind
us. I just want to note, ordinarily you would expect the two of them to give each other a hug or a handshake. They are not touching. Their spouses are walking out, waving, applauding. You can hear the music playing in the background. It has many of the trappings of a typical campaign event, but a few of the ones that you would expect, like the cheering crowd, just are not there. And so now the two couples are standing on opposite sides of the stage, waving to the small number of reporters assembled, which includes our very own Scott Detrow.
This is truly a strange 2020 pandemic moment. You have the Bidens on one side, Kamala Harris and her husband Doug Inhofe standing more than 10 feet away from each other, waving. But again, it's just a handful of reporters here, and there's no cheering crowd. Now the Bidens and Harris and her husband are heading off the stage. Harris and Biden are going to do a joint campaign fundraiser online later tonight. We're not sure what other campaign events they'll do after this because, of course, Joe Biden has really committed to not doing any traditional campaigning in the middle of this pandemic. But you heard the two of them stick to a lot of the same themes, talking about shared values, shared experiences, even though they certainly had very different childhoods. Kamala Harris growing up in Berkeley, California, Joe Biden growing up in Scranton and Delaware.
Scott, they also clearly did not want to leave any doubt that they were going to come out swinging. There were some really direct swipes at the president and his handling of everything from the economy to the pandemic. What struck you?
Two things struck me. One was the fact that Joe Biden said the highlighted the fact that President Trump very quickly attacked Kamala Harris when he held a White House briefing shortly after her pick was announced. Biden saying it was no surprise that Trump would attack Harris and use phrases like nasty. That's something that he repeatedly uses to attack women of color in particular. Biden seemed to highlight that, saying, we are going to fight back. Our supporters are going to fight back. We expect more attacks. Also jumped out to me, Kamala Harris kind of using refrains that she did when she campaigned for president herself, talking about the case against Trump and Pence, and really highlighting the disparity between the United States experience of this pandemic and what the rest of the world is doing, and with large parts of Europe and places like New Zealand reopening with cases near zero.
If you are just joining us, we are digesting the event that has just unfolded in Delaware. Kamala Harris, Joe Biden on stage together, two former political rivals taking a first step into figuring out how they're going to set that past rivalry aside and unite their message with the goal of capturing the White House come November. I want to bring in our national political correspondent, Mara Liasson, who was listening along to all of this. How'd they do on that front, Mara, in terms of uniting their message and setting a clear path for where they need to go in the next, what do we have, 83 days?
I think in terms of uniting their message, they were unified. The unity is Beau. And I thought that the fact that Kamala Harris spent a lot of time talking about Beau, who, of course, is Joe Biden's late son, who was an attorney general, along with her. He was the attorney general of Delaware and she of California, talked about what Beau was like, the kind of love, beautiful love, she said, between father and son. I think that she showed that they were not just a team, but they've become a kind of blended family. As Joe Biden said, I've always made my campaigns a family affair, and now all of you are honorary Bidens. She talked about Biden's own story as a father traveling 2 hours each way on the train back to Delaware every night after he lost his wife and daughter in a car wreck so he could be there for his two young sons. I thought they showed a very unified front. I thought that Kamala Harris had two things to do. One, she's a historic figure. She talked about her parents who were immigrants. She talked about being a child of the civil rights movement, strapped into her stroller, marching for civil rights. But she also really performed the most basic function of a vice presidential candidate, which is to prosecute the case against the incumbent president. In this case, that's the opponent. And she came out swinging.
Oh, I'm afraid we might have just lost Mara Liasson. Do we have NPR's Juana Summers on? Oh, there's Mara. She's
back.
That's
what she did, and I think she did it really well.
Mara, we lost you for a second there, but you're back now. I wanted to ask you to reflect on one of the first things Kamala Harris said when she took the stage.
No, I'm still here.
You are
I'm still here.
Great.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there's just a bit of a delay on the line. So she came out and she said, "I'm energized by the responsibility, ready to get to work, proud to stand with you." And then she said, "I'm mindful of all the heroic and ambitious women before me."
Can you guys hear me?
Punching the word ambitious. It seems like, Mara, maybe we, although we can hear you, it seems like you can't hear us, so we're going to try to get your line fixed. If we have NPR's Juana Summers with us, Juana, could you reflect on the way she is sort of embracing the double standard that female politicians are so often held to?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm here. She absolutely did reflect on that, and this is something that we saw come up in the weeks ahead of this announcement, where a number of people who were discussing, openly musing about who former Vice President Biden might pick as his running mate, talking about Harris as perhaps too ambitious, you know, and I can't tell you anytime I've ever heard anyone talk about a male politician and say he's perhaps too ambitious to run for office. And I thought it was really interesting to hear her talk about that openly and to kind of name check it, and for Biden himself, as Scott Detrow noted, to call those criticisms out as well. I have spent my day talking to so many Black women activists and strategists and voters, and they've expected that whoever the vice presidential pick would be, and they expected that it would be a Black woman, that she would be open to this sort of critique from the president and his allies. But I think that the condemnation that we saw from so many women, so many people who are involved in this process, who are involved in politics, who have said that that's just unacceptable, shows that we've reached a new place in our politics. Women are galvanized after the Me Too movement. Women have harnessed their political power in record ways, are represented in offices up and down the ballot. And frankly, I think a lot of them have had enough. And that's why we saw this open repudiation of those kind of comments in Kamala Harris's first remarks as the vice presidential candidate for the Democratic ticket.
I want to play just one key moment of many that we heard just there. This is Joe Biden, and he is talking about Charlottesville, which was the anniversary was today, and he was laying out what he sees as the stakes in this election. Want to stay with us because I want to let you react to this, and also Scott Detrow. This is Joe Biden talking about a battle for the soul.
I knew we were in the battle for the soul of the nation. That's when I decided to run. And I'm proud now to have Senator Harris at my side in that battle because she shares with the same intensity I do. For she's someone who knows what's at stake. The question is, for all Americans to answer, who are we as a nation? What do we stand for? And most importantly, what do we want to be?
Juana Summers, that particular line struck me because it is Joe Biden, to use his words, setting what the stakes are here, not just about fighting in the middle of a pandemic, not just about an election in the middle of an economic crisis, not just in the middle of crisis over racial justice and protests sweeping the nation. And we heard something very similar from Kamala Harris just there as well. They are setting the bar high for what they see this election as being about.
They absolutely are. And this is something that we heard from former Vice President Biden when he announced that he would seek the presidency this year. Charlottesville has always been at the center of his sort of theory of the case as to why he's running. And what I think was interesting is how we heard Kamala Harris kind of thread the needle and stressing that same message, as well as a message that civil rights is not a new fight for Joe Biden, and that this is a part of a march to equality and justice that he has been on for some time, and that the latest chapter of that is his selection of her as the first Black woman to serve as vice president after he served as vice president for the first Black president. So I thought it was really interesting to hear how they kind of knit those things together on a continuum, and also making the point that the work is leading up to that election in November, but that is not the end of the work that they hope to do in terms of restoring the decency of this country.
Scott Detrow, I don't know if you can still hear us there in Wilmington, but I wonder if you would weigh in on this.
Yes, I can hear you. Ari is probably going to have some flashbacks here. I'm now grabbing all my stuff and running to the bus.
Because I'm serving the experience of the reporters in the press pool dashing off after the event and trying to file in real time.
If you were doing a real Ari Shapiro, you would have a coat over your head to muffle all of the outside sound. But
listen, the air conditioning broke in that gym. There are no coats today. I do have one thing I wanted to add that really jumped out to me, and that's something that if I had had a question, I would have asked about. Joe Biden has spoken so much over the last few years of the agreement that he made with Barack Obama when he said that he would be his running mate, and that he would be the top advisor, the last person in the room, the person that Obama could trust to give input, to hear his thoughts, to be honest. Biden said he offered Harris that exact same arrangement. He wanted to have that kind of vice president. It's really a vice presidency modeled on Walter Mondale, and it seems to be exactly what Biden wants with Kamala Harris.
You know, Scott, we actually have that tape. Let's listen to this before we discuss it a little more.
I asked Kamala to be the last voice in the room, to always tell me the truth, which she will, challenge my assumptions if she disagrees, ask the hard questions, because that's the way we make the best decisions for the American people.
Go ahead, Scott. Yeah?
Yeah, so I think there was a lot of questions about what kind of vice presidency Joe Biden would be offering. He had said all along that the model was him and Barack Obama. But Joe Biden was the experienced Washington player, the guy who knew every other world leader from his time in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. No matter who he picked, his vice president was going to be someone with a lot less experience, a newer face on the stage. But he seems to want that exact type of close relationship. Of course, there are dozens of vice presidents throughout history who feel like they did not get the deal that they had agreed to with their running mate.
I'm curious, Scott, you heard more Biden stump speeches than many of us. Was there anything that he said today? Of course, this was the first time we heard from Kamala Harris in this role, so there was a lot new in what she said. Was there anything new in what he said that stood out to you?
I'm sorry, the Secret Service agent was checking my credential in that moment.
Not to worry. I'm curious, having heard so many Biden speeches on the campaign trail, more than many of us, what did he say today that was new, if anything?
You know, I don't think there was actually that much that was new, of course, aside from his introduction of Kamala Harris and speaking about her. Kamala Harris actually also spoke a lot of lines that were from her stump speech when she was a presidential candidate. It was interesting to hear her give her introductory remarks, talk about a lot of the things that Joe Biden's campaign may have added to the speech that he has certainly highlighted in his race. But then going back to the messages that she talked a lot about, and then among those were the fact that her parents, two immigrants, really taught her the value of social justice, of marching in the streets in Berkeley, California. And the fact that despite that upbringing, she decided to become a prosecutor. She's always talked a lot about the raised eyebrows that got from her family when she said, I want to go into law enforcement. And her argument all along, and certainly when she got a lot of pushback from progressive voters in the primary, was, I wanted to try to change the system from the inside, and I felt that I had to be a prosecutor, a district attorney, an attorney general to do that.
Scott, just one quick question, and then we're going to let you run to the bus, which is, you thought today was a long day, we're coming up on the convention. Just set the stage for what we are going to see next week.
We are going to unknown territory, to be honest. No speaker will be speaking from the convention in Milwaukee. It will be an entirely remote convention. So you're going to see events like you saw today where Biden, where Harris, where other high-profile speakers like Barack and Michelle Obama, like Bernie Sanders, will be speaking in remote settings, maybe to empty rooms, maybe from the at-home setup that they've been using throughout the pandemic. We don't know what that's going to look like. We don't know what the ratings will be in traditional broadcast mediums because there's no real convention. There's so much of that excitement, the packed arena. That's all going to be not there this year. Biden and the Democrats have been betting all along that if they played it very safe, if they said we're going to follow the rules, even if it means empty halls, voters in the middle of a pandemic would appreciate that. On the Republican side, of course, President Trump insisted he wanted to have a huge crowd and left the Charlottesville site to set up an arena in Jacksonville, Florida, before the Republican National Committee scuttle that plan. And as of right now, 2 weeks out, we don't know what the Republican convention will be.
All right, Scott, go catch your bus. Thank you for all of that tonight. We appreciate it. That's Scott Detrow reporting live from Wilmington, Delaware.
We also had NPR's Mara Liasson and Juana Summers. My co-host is Mary Louise Kelly. I'm Ari Shapiro, and you've been listening to live special coverage from NPR News of Democrat Joe Biden's first public appearance with his running mate, Senator Kamala Harris. This is special coverage from NPR News.